Oh, what a day, what a day it is if you're Ed Orgeron and Joe Brady and Bill Bush, but it's all trumped by Alex Bregman. Explanations to come. A lot of hoops talk today. We'll get the Yale perspective of things. We'll go live to Jacksonville. John Brady will join us. Then we'll go down memory lane. One of the best backcourts in LSU basketball history. The point guard extraordinaire, Ethan Martin. The shooting guard, Howard High C. Carter. We'll go down the lane reminiscing. And Michael Huguenin picks the bracket. Today, Hump Day, Wednesday, March 20th, 2019.
Warriors up 9. Looney right sideline to Durant. Durant to Curry. Curry fires from downtown. Got another one. Number 8 of the night for Steph.
McLean handles it on the left wing. Right-handed dribble. Screen by Musinski. 6 to shoot. McLean fires. He's got it. A triple. McLean's 4-3 tonight. It's an 8-point lead for Belmont. 63-55. Under 3 minutes to play. Jenkins starts to his right. Hand off Edge. Catch and shoot. Yes, sir! Darnell Edge, as accurate as they come. Edge connects from downtown. 73-66, Fairleigh Dickinson.
Hello, how are you, Acadiana? And welcome, yes, the dance is underway. Fairleigh Dickinson survives a play-in game. Belmont does the same. They advance to the first round of the NCAA tournament. LSU getting ready to start their tournament tomorrow against Yale. More on that to come. But today, it's all about this.
I need to feel you, Jerry. Show me the money. Jerry, you better yell. Show me the money.
Yes, indeed. Show me the money. And we'll start off with the small change, okay? The small change. New contracts for LSU assistants. Bill Bush approved by the Board of Supervisors. Bush getting a $50,000 raise and an extension, while Joe Brady, in his first season at LSU, fresh from the New Orleans Saints, got his contract approved. He's going to be making $400,000 a year. Next up, the Board of Supervisors approved Ed Orgeron's 2-year, $4 million contract extension. Coach O's buyout increases to $10 million, decreasing $250,000 each year. But they all pale in comparison to my man, shortstop extraordinaire, the former Tiger, Alex Bregman. He received a massive payday with reports saying he and the Houston Astros have agreed to a 5-year, $100 million contract, the second largest contract in the Astros organization history behind Jose Altuve's $151 million deal a year ago. Wow. Bregman, of course, started LSU. He was the number 2 overall pick in the 2015 MLB draft. He made it to the major leagues in 2016. He was on a speed collision course. He was a member of the 2017 World Series title team. Bregman had his breakout year last year, hit 286, 31 homers, 103 ribbies. That was enough to make his first All-Star team where, oh, by the way, he won the All-Star Game MVP. So you get that contract with his new endorsement package with Adidas, and it's nice to be one Alex Bregman. So again, CD, today is all about, for all of those, they're all singing this song right here, right now.
I need to feel you, Jerry. Show me the money. Jerry, you better yell. Show me the money.
dog, Jerry Maguire couldn't have said it any better. Show me the money. LSU hopes they get shown the money because the longer the run by LSU and SEC teams in this NCAA basketball tournament, the deeper the coffers get. Plain and simple. Coming up on the program today, Josh Heff is the ESPN Plus play-by-play voice of the Yale Bulldogs. Yale doesn't have a radio announcing crew. They don't have that. But they do television. Josh Heff will join us. Following Josh, we'll head out to Jacksonville. John Brady, watch the Tigers work out today. Listen to the press conference today, and he will share his thoughts on this big ball game that begins on Thursday at 11:40 a.m. We'll start our pregame coverage here on 103.7 The Game at 11, and the tip at 11:40. Hot Topic starts off hour number two, as it does each and every day, with my main man, Chill Dog Domain. And then we'll talk to two of, I think, the greatest players that LSU basketball has ever put on the court. Howard Highsea Carter, 6'5", big, strong shooting guard. Man, he was some kind of good. And we'll share some thoughts on his Final Four run. And then we'll talk to my point guard, Ethan Martin, the best pass first, shoot second, defending point guard in LSU basketball history. Pistol Pete was the greatest scorer. Chris Jackson was the second greatest scorer. And then Ethan Martin. Those are the three best point guards in LSU basketball history. I don't think there's any question. I don't think there's any doubt at all. We'll talk to Huck Martin in this hour. And also, Michael Huguenin will join us, and we'll go through expeditiously on speed dial his thoughts on the tournament bracket. Where does he have LSU going? Does he see LSU advancing past this first weekend? Does he see him advancing against Yale? Well, we don't know. We do know that Belmont won last night over Temple. Belmont advances. They will take on Maryland. The winner of the Maryland-Belmont game will take on the winner of LSU versus Yale. LSU wants to get through Jacksonville, and they want to head to Washington, D.C. as a part of the Sweet 16. Oh, it's massive pressure, but it's so much fun. So much fun. So a very happy day for LSU football coaches, particularly Ed Orgeron, and an absolutely sensational day for one Alex Bregman, who, as a young kid at his bar mitzvah, said he was going to make it to the major leagues and he was going to make a difference. Well, he has, and now he has the ability to make that difference, to save the game that he loves so much by helping kids growing up to play the game of baseball. Way to go, Alex Bregman. All right, 10 minutes after the hour, Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway again, closed right now. They are undergoing some incredible changes that you will absolutely love when the doors open again, hopefully this Saturday, the 23rd. So that's what we're hoping for. Let's wait and see. But it's going to be spectacular. And when they do open the doors, going to have the same great food, but in an even better environment with more televisions for you to be able to watch every game that you're interested in. And every NCAA tournament game will be on. Every LSU baseball game will be on. It'll all be there for you. So LSU baseball versus Nichols tonight. And then a rarity, LSU baseball at Georgia, LSU softball at Georgia. Also on the calendar, the LSU gymnastics squad, the number one seed in the upcoming SEC tournament, which will be held in the Smoothie King Center Saturday night. LSU's in their rotation starting at 7 o'clock. Tickets available. Head down to the Smoothie King Center and see this this awesome gymnastics team. So there's all kinds of stuff going on. But we will take a time out here. We'll begin our NCAA coverage of the Yale Bulldogs. We'll continue our coverage of the Yale Bulldogs when we return. Josh Heff, ESPN Plus play-by-play announcer, will share his thoughts on this very, dangerous ball club. That's next. It's a hump day edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show, and we're going to have some fun today. Come on back.
With a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. 15 minutes after the hour. By this time tomorrow, we'll know whether LSU survived in advance or whether a 14-seeded Yale Bulldog team pulled off one of those upsets that happens when March Madness begins. And Yale has caught the attention of everyone. They won the Ivy League Championship Tournament to get into the NCAA Tournament. And so we continue our coverage of the Bulldogs. Josh Heff is the ESPN Plus play-by-play voice of Yale basketball, and he's kind enough to join us as he's mixing in some baseball duties with some basketball. And Josh, I greatly appreciate the time, buddy. How are you?
Hey, Jordy, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on today.
What does it mean for Yale basketball to be in this tournament? What were your thoughts? You're close to the team. What does it mean to you, and what does it mean to the program?
Yeah, I think it's just the culmination of what was an outstanding season for the Bulldogs. This team really tried and succeeded in a really tough non-conference schedule that included a couple of Power 5 opponents, some weird road games for Yale. They played in the Pac-12 China game at the start of the season. So it's just a culmination of a lot of hard work. This is the second time that this senior class for Yale has made the NCAA tournament. And it's the second time in 4 years after the team went decades without reaching the NCAA tournament. So for James Jones, who's one of the winningest head coaches in Ivy League history, it just goes to show how hard he's worked, how hard his guys have worked, and it's just the culmination of a really, really good season in New Haven.
Josh, describe Yale basketball. This is, people have this stereotype about basketball in the Ivy League. Oh, yeah, the players are smart. They're just going to outthink you. They're going to out-basketball IQ you. They're gonna backdoor you to death, and they're going to keep going to play really good defense and low-scoring games. But that's not the case with this Yale club, is it?
No, this Yale team is a run-and-gun type squad. They do not force turnovers. They were last in the Ivy League in forced turnovers. They're in the bottom half of the country in all of college basketball in terms of forced turnovers. But that doesn't stop this team from scoring. They've got options 1 through 5 in the starting lineup, and two primary guys who come off the bench can stretch the entire floor. The Bulldogs aren't afraid to shoot outside. They've got 6'10 guys who drop three-pointers on opponents. Mm-hmm. So Yale can go out. They can score with anybody. And they don't play like an Ivy League team. Like you said, opponents think, oh, they'll just outsmart us and so forth. Well, for half the season, Yale's playing against Ivy League opponents. It's hard to outsmart somebody who's right. Also at such a prestigious institution. And this team, they're strong, they're physical, and they're not afraid. They played Duke in the non-conference, Miami, Cal, Vermont, Memphis. So it's a really tough schedule, and they're prepared mm-hmm. for a tough task in LSU.
Josh Heff, kind enough to join us, giving us the information we so desire for the Yale Bulldogs of the Ivy League. Everybody talks about Maya Oney, and Mike Krzyzewski paid him the biggest compliment, says he's a first-round draft choice. Tell me about the kid.
Yeah, he's great. Just to put it lightly, he's great. He couldn't be kinder, he couldn't be more friendly, and he couldn't be more well-spoken. I think all of those kind of go with playing at an Ivy League institution. Not only do you learn how to be a great athlete, but you learn how to be a great person, and that's part of James Jones's coaching philosophy as well. But in terms of what he can do on the floor, he's listed around 6'5", 6'6", and he can play the 1 through 4, and he can guard the 1 through 4. So when you have somebody who's that athletic, he can jump out of the gym. Anytime the ball touches his hand for a Yale home game, the crowd is just ready to jump off its feet because they know he can just explode, and he's not afraid to slice and cut through the defense, even if he's got the opponent's best defender on him. That really puts that defender in a tough night because Oney will hit the three. He's got that mid-range jumper from the elbow and the free throw line extended, and he's got highlight reel dunk after highlight reel dunk.
We all, and this may be an unfair question, but, you know, we haven't seen him play. Is there? He sounds to me, from an NBA level, he sounds like a Paul George type of player to me. Is there a correlation there?
Yeah, I think the overall game is similar to Paul George. He's not as big and as physical as George is, and I think that just goes the difference in age and experience
right.
and maybe
right.
College institution and the kind of program that Oney has gone through. But it's just amazing to see what he can do with the ball because he wasn't recruited highly out of high school. He's really worked hard. You see some of these guys that are in the ESPN top 100 recruits, and mm-hmm. they'll go to these big-name teams, and then you won't hear from them ever again because they kind of got lost in the fold and in the rotation. But Oney is somebody who was never even thought to be in the rotation. And after really a breakout year last year, we've had NBA scouts at every Yale home game this year. And as Mike Krzyzewski said, he should be a first-round pick. ESPN has him as a potential second-round pick. So I think we will see his name called this coming summer if he elects to leave Yale after 3 years. And if he's not, I don't think it'll hurt his draft stock if he yeah. comes back to play.
Absolutely. Josh Heff, kind enough to join us. I'll throw this similarity and see if you can get a correlation to it. Everybody, when they talk about LSU, they talk about Tremont Waters, New Haven, Connecticut young man, and Naz Reid. But to me, the guy that makes this LSU basketball team successful is Skylar Mays. Everybody focuses on Oney and what he does on the court, but tell me the one guy that is the glue that when he is playing well, this is a tough out.
Yeah, that's Alex Copeland for Yale. He's a starting guard for the Bulldogs, senior leader for Yale, and I think he's not afraid to put the team on his back. You look at Oney and he'll score all over the place, but when it comes down to bringing the ball up the floor, directing the offense, it's Alex Copeland in the Ivy tournament in that second game against Harvard, who Yale had lost to twice in the regular season, including a buzzer beater on their home floor in New Haven. The Bulldogs found themselves down double digits. Copeland spoke to the team in the huddle. You could see how animated he got. And the next couple trips down the floor, he just took control of the game. And what Alex does so well, and I haven't seen anybody do this in a long time in college basketball, he'll drive down the floor, he'll get his defender backtracking, and then he'll just stop on a dime between 6 and 10 feet out, sometimes at the free throw line, and he'll just hit swish after swish. So this is a guy in a Yale program, really, like I said, that features a mid-range jumper, and I think that that's something that not a whole lot of teams prepare for, and Alex Copeland just does it so well for Yale. And the other guy you can look at is senior Trey Fills, who's another mm-hmm. guard, and that's somebody who's really put his ego aside over this past season. He's realized that, hey, I'm a senior. It's no longer time for me to shine, but it's about the team. So what Trey has done is you'll see him take maybe 5 shots per game, which isn't really something you see very often out of a starting point guard, but instead he locks down the other team's best defender and the best offensive player, excuse me, in the Ivy League. That's usually another guard. So you see Trey Fills just running the show on defense for Yale and motivating everybody on that side.
Where do you see an advantage for Yale on the court? LSU with an outstanding season, the SEC regular season champions. When you look at LSU and you look at Yale, where do you see an advantage that that your team has when they play LSU?
Yeah, I think the advantage could be, and, you know, it just depends on how the game plays out tomorrow, but a lot of it relies on how the big men for Yale play. And if they're able to stretch the floor against LSU, like Yale was able to do so successfully during the Ivy League and even that non-conference schedule against Duke and Miami and Memphis, that'll really help the Bulldogs. Jordan Bruner is a junior for Yale, and he missed all of last season with a knee injury. And just to watch the way he's come back this year, if you put an isolation camera on him the entire game, I think you'd be blown out of the water that this guy is on an Ivy League team. He also can jump out of the gym. He's really tall. He blocks a ton of shots. And just like the rest of the guards do, I mean, he's a guard in a 6'10 body, so he'll hit the outside shot, and that's what Yale can do so well. They've got three guys who rotate in at the 4 and the 5 position who can all hit 3 and hit him with their eyes closed. So if LSU is slow to close out, That's something that Yale can take advantage of. And as I said a couple minutes ago, too, it's that mid-range jumper from Oney and Copeland that can really throw off a defense.
I'm really curious to see the rebounding battle. LSU's pretty darn good when it comes to offensive rebounds, about nearly 14 a game. But Yale is like third best in the country in defensive rebounds per game. So that's a stat line I'm really curious to watch.
Yeah, I think that also goes back to Bruner and two other guys, too, for Yale. Paul Atkinson, who's a sophomore, and Blake Reynolds, who's a senior for Yale. And Reynolds is a lot of fun to watch, too. He's just so big and so emotional underneath, and you really see that his emotional output can motivate the team. And you mentioned that Yale is so good at defensive rebounding. I think it was over 30 defensive rebounds per game, and it's because they just close out. They follow their shots. And they box out the opponents. And sometimes James Jones has three guys on the floor at 6'10", 6'9", or above, and it's really hard to stop them, especially when you just don't have a whole lot of scouting report. And I think something that could help Yale, too, on that rebounding margin is the fact that in the Ivy League schedule, you play back-to-backs every single week in your conference play. It's just Friday, Saturdays come January.
Wow.
So
okay.
Yale is really good at figuring out what to do on a short turnaround, preparing, studying, and that's what James Jones has done so well.
Y'all take that academic stuff pretty seriously up there, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Well, there's no athletic scholarships for Ivy League schools, so you've got to just do everything on the weekends for basketball, the Friday, Saturday turnarounds. You know, when you get recruited in high school, it sounds like the best thing ever because you're playing so frequently. And then by the time you're a senior, you can really see some of that wear and tear on the body. But these guys are smiling day in and day out, and it sets them up really well for a tournament format like the NCAA tournament.
30 seconds left here. Let me ask you. I know you're the Bulldogs, but I keep seeing this capital E-L-I-S apostrophe. What is that?
Yeah, that's the Elis. That's a secondary nickname for Yale. Eli Yale, you know, if you go first name, last name. So that's where it all comes from. And you know, you've got the Bulldogs in there, too. And just, the school was founded in the 1700s, 1700s. So everything about it is just so traditional, so ancient sounding.
I love it. Josh Heff, you were tremendous. I cannot thank you enough for your time, and have fun with the baseball gig, but we'll all be watching the hoops, man. So thank you again. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it, and I hate to say it on your show, but I think LSU is on an upset alert tomorrow.
Okay. I wouldn't expect you to say anything else. Thank you very much.
All right, Josh.
You take care. Josh Heff with the Yale perspective of things. Of course he's going to say upset alert. Absolutely. We'll see what John Brady has to say next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Minutes after the hour. Welcome back. This is the Jordy Hultberg Show, and now we head out to Jacksonville, Florida. And boy, is that a city that's near and dear to our next guest's heart, because back in 2006, the run to the Final Four started in Jacksonville when John Brady was coaching the Tigers. And John, now the color analyst on the LSU Sports Radio Network, joins us. When I mentioned Jackson, it's got to be one of your favorite cities, huh, John?
Yeah, it kind of is. You know, it was it was where it all started. We were able to beat A&M on Darryl Mitchell's 24-foot shot. You know,
That's great coaching, man.
It was in the same arena, and Taz and Mitchell was showing everybody where Darryl Mitchell hit the shot from, and you know, we're down one with 12 seconds to go, and we shoot a 24-footer with 4 seconds left. That's great coaching.
That is great coaching. You drew that play up perfectly in the huddle. No question.
That's right.
But just, you know what? That's the kind of play that can really jettison you, and it certainly did. And that was a great start to a great tournament run. Now this LSU team is going to try and do the same thing. You've been with them. You've seen them practice. Tell us what you've seen. What's going on with them?
You know, it's really incredible how this team absorbs things that come their way. They never get too high about it. They get excited after a big win, obviously, but then they always seem to come back to who they are, and they don't get overly excited, and they don't get too down and distracted, it seems. I said it on the film session today, and they were attentive. Greg Heyer did a great job with it. Tony Bedford did, you know, opened it up and told mm-hmm. them what they need to concentrate on, and the team was attentive. I sit way in the back, and I just watch, and I think this team's ready to play. I think they're going to play well. You know, we could have beat Florida SEC tournament. We only lost by, you know, a point or so. We got a bad call with 4 or 5 minutes to go to change the momentum of the game. So, you know, this team will be ready to play. And my thumbnail of this Yale team is we average 83 a game, almost 84. This Yale team averages 81 a game. But mm-hmm. the 83 or 84 points that we score a game has been against much better competition overall and better athletes than the 82 that they score. So that in a nutshell means we've played better teams and we've got better athletes. Now, anything can happen, but I certainly give the edge to LSU in terms of just being a better basketball team overall.
John Brady, live in Jacksonville, Florida, LSU, Yale, 11:40 Central Time tomorrow, right here on 103.7 The Game. Without giving away the keys to the kingdom, what was LSU stressing? What was Greg Heyer stressing in this film session? What is LSU going to try and take away, and what are they going to try and do offensively to best utilize their chances to win the game?
Well, the advantage of our team is inside and around the goal. We have more size and more length. And they can't rebound the ball with us. They shouldn't be able to. Now, anything can mm-hmm. happen, but, you know, the way we offensive rebound the ball and the way we've rebounded the ball, particularly halfway through the season on to the end, has really been good. And so we have the advantage inside. We have the advantage on the board. And the strength of this Yale team is its perimeter. But, you know, our perimeter's not bad either.
No.
So,
no.
Yeah, I like our perimeter, to be honest.
I do, too.
With Javonte back playing, and you know, we've got four really good perimeter players. They have four really good perimeter players. One player in particular that's pretty good, this Oney player, is mm-hmm. averaging, you know, he's averaging about 18 a game, and they say he's an NBA player, but he's not just overly powerful. So if the strength of the Yale team is on the perimeter, and our team's pretty good in the perimeter, then we have certainly the edge around the basket because we just have bigger, stronger, longer, more athletic players.
You know what it comes down to, John. It's not brain surgery. If you shoot the ball halfway decent with your athleticism, you win the game. The only way Yale wins is if LSU doesn't shoot the ball, can't throw it in the ocean. That's my hole. I know you got to defend and rebound, but it all comes down to if you put the ball in the hole as per your norm, you're a better team.
Yeah, well, you know, they shoot it better from the floor. You know, they shoot 49% from the floor as a team, and we shoot it about 45% as a team. But our ability to offensive rebound the ball will make up the difference in that if we do what we've been doing. Now, I think what Yale is going to do, they like to play quick, too, and that's going to be right up our alley. I don't think they're going to come out and change the way they play in one game, but you know, I think something uncanny has to happen, uncharacteristic. Yale's got to hit 15, 14, or 15 three-pointers, and then we shoot it poorly. Now, if that happens, you know, then they have a chance to win the game. But I think over a 40-minute game, the game may just be too long for the Yale athletes. I think 30 minutes is a good game, but I think the 40-minute game is just too much for them, and I look for us to win the game in advance and play Maryland or Belmont in the next round.
John Brady from Jacksonville, Florida, LSU versus Yale. Let's get to the big elephant in the room that everybody's going to make a big to-do over, and that's the fact that mm-hmm. the head coach is not there. LSU's had now mm-hmm. two games under their belt without Will Wade. That I mean, there's a sense of normal. Is there a sense of normalcy that you see now and familiarity now that this group of coaches have banded together and the players and the coaches, they bonded? I mean, is that an excuse anymore?
Well, I don't know. I know they've been in touch with Will Wade over the phone and they've talked and they're trying to – the assistant coaches are doing business as usual. They haven't changed anything. They're not trying to do anything that's significantly different that doesn't upset this team and how and the right. approach that they need to have. The only thing I want to pay attention to and look for is I don't care what kind of business you're in, where you're coaching or whether you run a business – sometimes, and it's only human nature, this isn't a criticism of anyone. Sometimes in human nature, if the boss isn't there for an extended period of time, sometimes you may have some slippage in your performance, regardless of the job. So that's the only thing I want to look for. I haven't seen it. I haven't noticed it. And I'm going to pay attention to it the first 6 or 8 minutes of the game to see if there's any slippage in our execution and our preparation and the concentration level that we have in the game.
Take me back to your coaching days. What was it like? You get rid of the regular season's over with, the SEC tournament's over with, and now here you are in this single elimination that you live for, that every player wants to get to. Take me back to your coaching days, how you handled things. Did you try to make it as normal as humanly possible?
Well, we did. We didn't change the routine as much. The preparation probably was a little more intense. We probably put more concentration on the mental part of it as opposed to the physical, because the physical is already in the tank. And it was just about how we're going to guard certain players, certain tendencies that they have, and look for those on the floor. So the mental preparation was really bigger than what we did on the practice floor. Now, and really, in a situation like this, the most important game, Jordy, as you know, is the first one. Everything needs to be in on that first game. Don't think about the next one. Don't look at the matchups, because if you don't win the first one, you know, it doesn't matter after that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think the emphasis on this first game, and I think if they can get this first game under their belt, they will relax and be ready to play better in the second game. That's what happened to our teams that we took to the NCAA tournament. Just get by that first game the best you possibly can, and then the second game you're much more relaxed and ready to play.
How much do you value – I remember with the teams that I was on, that initial year that we got in the tournament, boy, it was like, man, it was a nervous kind of an anxiety thing. The next year was a lot better. The next year after that was a lot better. And then the year after that was it was a Final Four run. Only Cavell Bigby Williams has been to the NCAA tournament on this team. Yale's got four seniors that were there, albeit in limited roles, as was Cavell Bigby Williams when he was at Oregon. They didn't play a lot, but they were there. They kind of experienced it. Nobody else on this LSU team has. Does that concern you?
You know, it would, but being around this team, it's like I said before, it's a different sort of team, and they don't seem to be too hyped up, and they don't seem to be too concerned. I was at the breakfast today, watched the tape, went to the practice. Their approach is good. I think it's progressing along quite well. The only thing I worry about is their performance in the game and the execution about the head coach not being there. And I know the assistants have done all they can and all they could do to get them to concentrate as they should. And I'm interested to see how that takes effect. I know if Will Wade was here, I think this game is a double-digit win by the Tigers, and it could be anyway. But certainly, with him not being here, we'll see what kind of impact it has on the play of the team when they actually tip it off tomorrow, 10:40, 12:40, whatever the case is.
just
12:40, I think, Eastern time.
You got to know that, John. You got to be on time now, big guy.
Chris Blair will get me there.
Don't be showing up at 10:40, man. That's way too early. You and I love to shoot the basketball, and some gyms, the rims are tight, and it's not what we call a shooter's gym. What did you find? What do you think about this arena that LSU's about to play in, and how many people does it hold?
Well, I'm not sure. I think it holds at least 8,000 or 10,000. You know, it's a nice, you know, it's a nice arena. It's open. It's what they're used to playing in.
Okay.
I didn't see the ball not going in today. I thought the ball went in pretty well, pretty consistently. It was a good, relaxed, focused practice. Then they left there and went to another gym to really walk through and guard what Yale is going to do. And I didn't guard that because I saw it in the tape today. I didn't go to that because I saw it in the tape this morning.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
I think the preparation, the steps they're taking, the approach of this team, the attitude of it is good, Jordy. I will be surprised if we don't come out and play well and win the game.
Who do you think has a big game? I know, you know, who has to have a really big game, in your opinion, for this to be a nice win for LSU? I know the whole team, but who specifically in your mind, knowing the matchups, knowing what Yale's going to do defensively and all that, who are you keeping an eye on?
Well, I think Naz Reid and Big B Williams should play well and have good games because of the advantage we have on the inside. And then I look for Tremont Waters to have a big game. I don't think he played as well as he could play against Florida, in the SEC tournament, particularly down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's anybody on the team of Yale that can stay in front of Tremont Waters or any of our guys, really, but particularly Tremont. So I look for Nas and Big B Williams to have good games because of our advantage there, and I look for Tremont Waters to be the best guard on the floor tomorrow when we play.
It was a great place for LSU to play back in 2006. John Brady and the Tigers started their run to the Final Four. I know it brings back some great memories, man, and we look forward to the call of the game. And go have yourself a nice dinner. Isn't it nice not having to be the coach? You can relax and enjoy things while all those other guys are in there studying, biting their fingernails, nervous wrecks.
Well, it certainly is, sitting here, a different perspective than
yes.
when you're sitting at the head of that
yes.
bench. It is a different feel.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, thanks for sharing some memories, and thanks for the insight, man. And from all of us, give the Tigers our very best of luck. Have you noticed? Is there a good contingent of LSU fans in town?
You know, I haven't noticed anything yet. You know, we got in here yesterday evening and went straight to eat and that sort of thing. But I'm sure there'll be a good LSU crowd here. But I think a lot of them are coming in today.
Yes.
They didn't come 2 days early. So I think a lot of them are coming to Jacksonville this afternoon. And I know there's several people I know that are coming today. So I think that's when they'll show up, is tonight. And I think there'll be a good crowd there for us tomorrow.
Dinner on John Brady in Jacksonville, best steakhouse in town. I know how that works, man. But
I'll be there.
Yeah, I know. I know you will. I know you will. You're the best, man. Have fun and good luck, and have a great call of the game as always.
Okay. Thanks, my friend. All right.
All right. You're the best. John Brady live from Jacksonville. Feels really good about the team. He says they're very relaxed. That's fine the day before. But let me share my experiences with it. In fact, I'll share that with you next. My thoughts on the NCAA tournament and what it's all about. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
We finish off our number one of the program. I can't tell you how excited I am about hour number two. Yes, Hot Topics, CD does a great job with that, and we'll start off hour number two with that. And then we're going to go down memory lane with two of the best LSU basketball players ever. I played with both of them. They were tremendous. Howard Carter and Ethan Martin. They were spectacular players. Really, really great players. And I'm looking forward to spending some time with them. And then Michael Huguenin will join us, and he'll go over his bracket and find out how far he has LSU going. and who is in his final four. And it's all subject to opinion. Everybody has their opinion on this thing. LSU, I really believe this. I think they were galvanized with the tragedy of losing Wade Sims so senselessly before the season started. And I think they've become even more galvanized with their head coach out. They didn't show it against Florida. They did not. Florida just wanted the game more. Florida needed that game to get into the tournament, and they did. And it was a close game. And LSU didn't play well. The backcourt didn't play well at all. A questionable. It was a terrible call on the Nazarene running through the screen, and they counted the three-pointer, and then the technical foul. Just terrible. All right, but that's under the bridge. There's a lot of anxiety. I don't care how loose they are the day before. That's fine. I promise you, when they get out there and start warming up game day, there's going to be a lot of anxiety there. You wouldn't be a normal human being if you didn't. So LSU's got to get to that first TV timeout. They're going to expend a lot of energy, and they just got to get to that first TV timeout. And the timeouts in the NCAA tournament are a lot longer because there's so much money involved in this thing. So you'll have a chance to catch your breath. The keys are always you got to keep your players out of foul trouble. You can't let Nazarene get two quick fouls and he's out of the game. Big B Williams, two quick fouls, out of the game. Can't do it. Backcourt's not going to do that, but it's the front court that you worry about. So they got to play smart, fundamental basketball and not get in foul trouble. So you think about the enormity of the situation during warm-ups. And then it becomes a basketball game. And I'm speaking from personal experience and in talking to guys that I played with. It's a regular basketball game until there's about 5 minutes left. And you look up at that scoreboard and you realize what's at stake. 5 minutes till your season is over if you don't get it together real quick, or if you haven't fallen behind so greatly that it's insurmountable, or your season is going to continue. There are no bad teams in the tournament. There really aren't. And every team can win. This, you know, they proved it last year with Baltimore, Maryland, Baltimore County beating Virginia, a 16 beating a 1. It can happen. It can happen. LSU's got more talent, more athleticism, more size. But Yale can play. Yale can shoot it. And that's what makes basketball. In college basketball, you know, in the NBA, it's the best 4 out of 7. So you can withstand a bad shooting game. The best team is going to win. In 7 games, you're going to determine who the best team is. College basketball, 140-minute game, anything can happen. Teams are going to make runs. And this team's going to have to weather that. And this team's going to have to stay unified, stay together, and play ball. If they play ball, they'll be fine. But just because they're loose as a goose right now, that's great. I promise you, tomorrow it'll be a different story. And it'll be the same for Yale as well. Same thing holds true for everybody. There is emotional stress in this. Because you grow up as a kid. If you bounce a basketball and you have aspirations to play collegiately and you're good enough to do so, your goal is to get to the NCAA tournament. And when you finally get there, you're like, holy cow, we don't want this thing to end. We want it to move on. LSU has the better team. That's why they're a 3 seed than 14-seeded Yale. There's no doubt about that. They just got to play. They're not going to take Yale lightly. I know that. They certainly can't. So we'll see. And again, 11:40 tip right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show starts at 11. All right, hour number two about to happen. Hot topics. We'll talk about the money that Ed Ogeron got, his staff got, and what Alex Bregman got. We'll also talk about the good old days. Yes, indeed. The greatest team ever with two of the greatest players ever. and then Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Busy hour number two. Come on back on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go. Some of you young whippersnappers may have never heard of Ethan Martin and Howard Carter. Google them. Google them. Ethan Martin, Howard Carter. And you will see what you're about to hear from them and their memories of the NCAA tournament and their advice that they would give to this current LSU basketball team. But first, as we do each and every day at this time of day, CD, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Money, money, money. CD, take it away, my friend. How are you?
What is going on, Jordy, on this fantastic Wednesday afternoon? It's just positively beautiful outside. Go ahead and say it.
Go ahead and say it. It's a Chamber
of Commerce
Day.
I didn't want to steal the gimmick, but you gave me permission, so we're going to roll with it, Jordy.
There you go.
But we got to start off with somebody who's enjoying every single day from this point on over the next 5 years, and that's Alex Bregman getting paid. Dude is just raking it in, $100 million over the next 5 years. I guess it was literally a Jerry Maguire-type situation where he was pretty much telling the Astros, show me the money. So definitely just huge for Alex Bregman to get this extension, and huge for the Astros as well.
Wasn't it just a couple of weeks ago where it seemed like they weren't going to pay him and he was upset? Some calmer heads prevailed and they said, man, this kid's young. He's really, really good.
Yep.
He's an all-star. He was the all-star game MVP. He's putting up big numbers. He's solid, steady at third base with a great glove and a great arm. Lock them up, and they did. Good for him, good for the Astros. It's a win-win all the way around.
It's amazing, Jordy. And we're talking about the MLB, apparently. I'm not necessarily counting it, Jordy, but the MLB season opened up last night in Japan.
Ichiro
Suzuki. The dude still got it all these years later, Jordy. And it's got me thinking, is he one of the best players in the history of the game?
No question. I mean, the numbers he put up, he's a five-way player. He does everything. He can hit for power. He can hit for average. He can run. He can field. He can throw. Absolutely Hall of Famer, first ballot in like Flynn.
Yeah, he should be, Jordy. That'd be disappointing if he doesn't get in first ballot, because the guy just has done so much for the game, and he's a legend in Japan. And also in the MLB, if he combined his numbers together, he would have obliterated Pete Rose's all-time hits record. I'm sure the MLB wouldn't mind that after all. Just kind of scrub him from the records altogether, because they're not going to put him in the Hall of Fame anytime soon, Jordy. But, man, it's great to see Ichiro Suzuki still looking pretty darn good. Isn't he approaching his 50s at this point?
He's like 45 years old, and only thing you can tell is the color of the hair and the lack of it, but everything else. I mean, they showed him taking one from right field and throwing all the way to third base on a rope. So he's still got the cannon of an arm. I don't know if he's going to play this year or not. I don't know. That might have been a ceremonial thing. We'll see.
Like I said, you play in the Tokyo Dome, you need to get Ichiro Suzuki out there. That's going to put plenty of butts in the seats, Jordy. And now I got to talk.
It was great because I wake up early every morning and I turn the TV and there's baseball. I went, you got to be kidding me. It's live. I said, good. This is wonderful. I loved it.
It's just fantastic, Jordy, with what we talk about. Ichiro Suzuki But I actually saw something really awesome last night over at the Teague at Russo Park, and that was Hayden Cantrell hitting for the cycle, only the fourth Cajun to ever do it, Jordy. And it got me thinking, of course, a perfect game, a no-hitter. But how about a complete game shutout? What's more impressive, Jordy, the complete game shutout or hitting for the cycle?
Boy, they're equally impressive, huh? Golly. I'm going to go a no-hitter or hitting for the cycle. Man, that's a tough one.
I was just going to go complete game shutout because I feel like no-hitter
Okay, no, I'm going to go for the cycle. The cycle.
I think that's money, yes. Jordy. That is money when we're talking about. Because, like I said, and it was amazing to see because like he was able to get everything. He just, his last at bat just needed a double, and he hit it, and it was just perfect. Like right when he hit it, we were all kind of in the press box saying, "Yeah, that's a double. He's gonna hit for the cycle."
Huh?
It was crazy to think that only happened three times prior, and twice in the last 5 years.
You've got to admit the hardest thing to do is hit a triple.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely.
Without a doubt.
Being said, I think the Cajuns had at least three of them last night. And
wow.
Well, for what it's worth, one of them was smoked down the right field line, and just basically nobody could grab it until it wound up getting to the wall.
Yeah.
And then you have former STM Cougar has got some wheels. Alex Haney just was cruising down the base paths and made it look too easy with that triple. It was impressive to see everybody kind of do their thing.
Absolutely, man. Good for them. And hitting the cycle, that's in the memory books forever. Absolutely.
Oh, definitely. Especially for him. He had actually missed out on it a couple times. Talked to him about it after the game. And he said, when he hit the double, euphoric.
That's great. That's great.
I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, Jordy, you know, have you ever, like, in terms of basketball equivalency, let's go with a triple-double. Have you ever racked up those kind of stats?
Heck no. I got some double-doubles, but the rebounding thing was a killer.
Yeah.
No. I didn't have the hops for that. I did hit a hole-in-one once on a golf course.
Nice.
That's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah.
You talk about luck. Anyway.
You got me beat there, Jordy.
Never got a triple-double, no.
Never got a triple-double.
Wait. High school I did, but not in college.
Yeah.
High school I did. And that shows you the difference between high school and college. I mean, there's a slight difference, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know entirely all too well what you mean there, Jordy. And last one before I let you go, because we got great guests coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Tate Martell getting his NCAA waiver. You mentioned a little bit yesterday. I kind of just wanted to save this for today. Is getting his waiver potentially opening up Pandora's box, and college football could be doing something like free agency going forward?
I'm all for the players. If he doesn't like where he is, and because coaches can get up and leave with no penalty anytime they want, open up the box. Let them transfer. Some will. Some don't want to. That's fine by me. It's, as long as they let coaches go anytime they want, players should be able to go anytime they want, in my humble opinion. So there you have it. How about that? Do you agree with me or not?
And I agree with you wholeheartedly, Jordy. How can you not? You got to be pulling for the players in this kind of situation, because these guys need to be able to set themselves up for a lot of success going forward. And I think Tate Martell may be that first case to get things done and start moving the wheels. Because trust me, the wheels need to be moving. They need to put some grease in them, because honestly, the NCAA has been out of touch for a good while. This could wind up affecting not just college football, but all college sports when you think about it.
That's exactly right. Give the players some freedom. You're not paying them, so give them some freedom to go where they're going to be happy. All right, there's your Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The B-Art family for nearly 90 years. Finest spices, finest peppers, the best hot sauce. Bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better, and I mean everything tastes better, with Cajun Chef on it, right there in St. Martinville. And you can find it everywhere. But bring a little small bottle with you just in case. Just in case. All right. Best backcourt ever. Howard Carter, Ethan Martin. We'll talk to both of them next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. Can't wait. On Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. Come on back.
taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back as we continue our coverage of the NCAA basketball tournament. Going down memory lane, Ethan Martin, the point guard extraordinaire, coming soon. But he had to have a running mate, and at the two-guard spot, he was absolutely sensational. From Redemptorist High School, set foot on the LSU campus, and just took off from day one. Needed a big bucket down the stretch. You called his name, you called his number, and that is Howard High C. Carter, one of my faves, and I loved playing with him as a teammate, and he joins us now. High C., how are you, my friend?
What's up, Jordy? Am I talking to Jordy, the teammate, or Jordy, my assistant coach?
This is your teammate once and for all, my friend, once and for all.
You were the assistant coach, Mom.
Yes, I was. Yes, I was. And look, when they asked, yeah. My opinion, I said, "Get it to Carter and get out of his way."
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to ask Ethan Martin the same question. I'm going to ask you. This is March. This is what you go to college to play for. What memories come to your mind from your playing days as you're getting ready to start into an NCAA tournament?
It's a good feeling and a bad feeling. We came so close. We were right there. I think we put it all on the floor the first half, and second half it was a little difficult.
Against Indiana.
Of course, our leader, Durant Rudy Macklin, was injured, was somewhat injured. So, I get excited. This is when I really watch college basketball. It's like I said, it's a good feeling to watch it at this time of year. And but sometimes I don't like to think about how close we were. Yeah. What could have been, you know?
People don't realize, right? They don't realize how hard it is to get there, man. And man, when you get there and you get disappointed like that, it's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, it is. And then you try to think about, if I only knew what I know now, and the life just doesn't work like that. It might have turned out different, but then life just don't work like that. It wouldn't be fair if we knew what we knew now back then, you know. And
Amen. Yeah. That was a remarkable season. I remember being 17-0 in SEC play, and you played Kentucky on a Sunday afternoon, national television. I still say Sam Bowie fouled you in the corner. What do you say?
I think so. I think he did. Bill Brown had me talk to Sam Bowie a couple of years ago. He had been talking to him, and he had me give him a call, and we talked. But I forgot the phrase he used. It was something like bluegrass rules or something. Bill Brown probably knows exactly what it was. He said he fouled me too, but he said word they use up there, like to say for home cooking, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right, exactly.
It was funny. But yeah, he admitted that he did follow me also.
That was a remarkable team. But again, you know, you just don't make a run to the Final Four. You had a couple of years prior to that where that tournament experience is so important, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Seemed like, I know before I got there, seemed like you guys lost to the same. LSU as a program lost to the eventual national championship, maybe 3 years in a row. It was like Irvin,
Michigan
and
State,
Johnson.
Michigan State, yeah, Louisville, and then Indiana.
I think so.
When you look at this year's team, I don't know if you followed them that much, but they were the regular season champions. What do you think of this team as they get ready to start their journey?
I think they have everything. They have good guards. They have good big men. That's a real talented team. They are capable of going a long ways. And we shouldn't, as fans and supporters, I don't think we should minimize or tarnish the season they've had because of, the things that has occurred lately. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't minimize how good they are, the things that they accomplished. But I think they have a good shot,
I'm with you. I am with you. Who was the most talented player? Take yourself out of the equation. Who was the most talented player you played with at LSU?
The most talented player I played with at LSU. I would have to say Rudy Macklin or Dwayne Scales.
Yeah.
Overall, like raw talent. During my time, I would say
Scales, man.
Scales or Macklin, one of those two. Leonard Mitchell was a great athlete, also.
But describe what it was.
Then we had our. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, but describe what it was like having the blessing of playing with Ethan Martin.
Oh, he's a 2-point guard who. Now you have all type of point guards. You have the ones that like to score. You have the ones that, but he was that true point guard. Some teams still have that true point guard who gets everybody involved, who gets the offense set up, who distributes the ball, who can score also when he wants to, who steals the ball, who plays good defense. He was a true point guard. You know what I mean? True to the position. There's point guards today,
right,
all kinds, and you still have some true point guards, but he just made things so much easier for me.
What you think?
I'm sure you played a couple of years with him too. I know he made it easier for you.
Yeah.
Because
I
could picture you a lot of times wide open all by yourself. Making string music too. So
yeah, that's because they were all geared towards stopping you, and they let people like me wide open. So I appreciated you being out there, man. I really did. What was your one shining moment? What when you look at your whole LSU career, was there one moment in time that stands out above anything else to you?
Well, as far as memory go, I remember that last second shot in Georgia. That was a big thrill for me.
Yeah. Yep.
But being a team-oriented guy, it was the championships, SEC championships or the one SEC tournament championship. Those are the best moments for me. But like I said, individually, the thing you would remember most when I talk to people, it was the last second shot in Georgia.
Remember it. Like it was yesterday. For all those out there that are big Howard Carter fans, what's High C doing these days to take up his time?
I'm working, man. You got to pay bills and pay the mortgage. So I've been working with the East Baton Rouge Assessor's Office for the last 15 years. And then I also do some part-time work in the recovery field.
Awesome.
And,
awesome.
That's what I've been doing. But my main job is with the East Baton Rouge Parish Assessor's Office.
I am told that you have a son who is a phenomenal soccer player. Is that correct?
He's not bad. He's he's on the contract with Tottenham of the Premier League, although they've loaned him down to the championship, to the league below the Premier League. That's what they do to the young kids who are not getting a lot of playing time. They send them down.
Okay.
Although they're on the contract with the Premier League team, they loan them out to the lower division so they can get, playing time. And right now he's in a place called Swansea City, which is in the league below the Championship League. But he's still on the contract with Tottenham. And he also plays with the U.S. national team periodically when they get called. Yeah,
you got to be a proud papa.
Yeah, I am. He got his genes from me and his athletic ability, but I can't. I got two left feet. I can't really mess with that soccer ball.
But baby, you could put that ball in the hole, baby. That's all I know. You could put that ball in the hoop. You were one of those rare big guards, thick guards, and you knew how to utilize your body, and you had that little Michael Jordan turnaround fadeaway inside the paint, man. It just, you couldn't stop it. It was a beautiful thing to watch. We'll close on this, my friend, and I greatly appreciate your time. If you had some advice to give to this LSU basketball team as a person who's been in big NCAA tournament games and got to a Final Four, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to leave it all on the floor. Don't never let someone else outwork you. A lot of coaches put up with mistakes, but most coaches that I know or been involved with, they would not put up with giving top effort. And, you know, that's the same thing I tell my son all the time. I said, you know, never let somebody outwork you. Leave it all on the field, on the pitch. They say, so I could just leave, you know. You don't want to look back and say, if I would have worked a little harder, if I would have, you know, if I would have died at that last ball, or if I, you know, that's, you know, the only advice I can give. Just don't let no one outwork you. Leave it all on the court, and however it's supposed to go after that, that's how it'll go.
All right. So next time I see you, now we're going to get on the court and we're going to play a game of horse. Are you ready?
That's what I do. That's what I do. I can't play no one-on-one. I can't do none of that, but that's my game, horse. Yeah, I would love it.
We're on for it, buddy. I love you to death, man. I'm so happy for you. And thanks for sharing your story and sharing some memories with us, buddy. I greatly appreciate it.
Okay, I'm gonna see two of our buddies tonight, Coach Dale Brown and Rudy Macklin. I'm supposed to ride down to New Orleans with them too.
There you go. See UNO and
watch Johnny Jones.
Yeah. Good deal.
Okay.
Coach Brown, thanks for the invite. No, I got to do a television show, so I got to work, man. But okay. Tell Johnny hello for me, all right?
I sure will. Okay.
All right, baby. Thank you, Howard. Howard Carter, sharing some memories with us. Up next, the point guard, the best, Ethan Martin.
Whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back. Time to go down, continuing to go down memory lane. I still to this day believe that our next guest was the greatest pass first, shoot second defensive point guard in the history of LSU. He came from McKinley High School right there in the backyard of LSU and came on campus and just took this LSU basketball team to great heights, including a Final Four in 1981. My near and dear friend, Ethan Huck Martin. Huck, how are you, my friend?
Hey, John, how you doing, man?
I am doing terrific. What does this time of year bring back? What comes back to your mind here in March with the start of an NCAA tournament?
Well, it brings back the memories that during our time, brings back going to the NCAA tournament, March Madness.
It's great stuff. I'm just curious. You always looked like you were just taking a little leisurely stroll in the park. No work. Were you ever nervous before a basketball game?
I'm nervous before every basketball game, Jordy. I just try not to let it show. He's eating me up inside, but I'm trying to fake it, man. I'm faking it real hard.
I'm going to tell you what, you missed your calling, man. You would have several golden Oscar trophies as the winner of the Academy Awards the way you acted, my friend, because nobody ever thought that you had any nerves whatsoever. And I think that's what made everybody so calm, the fact that we knew when you had the ball, everything was good.
Exactly. And I try not to show them. My pops taught me at a very young age, trying not to be rattled, looking like you're nervous. So, you know, if you're looking like you're nervous, and you supposedly the point guard is the lead on the team, so it would have just flickered off to the other guys, too.
When did it hit you personally that because we all have doubts. You go from high school, you're the big man on campus. You come to college and you're like, I don't know about you, but I never played against guys that were 7 foot tall, 7 foot two. When did it hit you that you knew that, hey, I can play on this level and play very, very well?
Well, I already knew I could play, but I was just amazed when I got to the college level that all the other guys can play just as well. I mean, plus they're taller. So, you know, so I just kept my confidence within myself and just constantly realizing and saying, hey, you can play with these guys. So I just went out there and played.
What did you think of that left-hander named Hultberg, number 20? What would you say to the listening audience? Describe his game.
Well, his game was a blonde bomber. You know, he loved to put it up from anywhere. Good thing we didn't have a three-point line there, because he probably would be in the pros right now, you know. Back then, I was saying, not now, but back then. Because that's why he shot was like long-range three-pointers, man.
So you didn't mind throwing it to him?
Well, as long as he makes it. Makes me look good, and he look good as well. So that's a shift for me, and 2 points for him.
That special season, Ethan Martin, kind enough to join us, point guard extraordinaire, that special 1980-81 team. But that was a culmination of years before then. You know, they don't give it to you easy. You got to earn your way. And the 2 years prior to that kind of built up to that, didn't it?
So we gradually build each year. So the first year was kind of a subpar year, 18-9, something like that. The next year we 23, next year 26, and the final year was 31. So it gradually built up. It's just a continuous thing. You're just like you're supposed to be as a player, gradually build each year.
You got to play against Isaiah Thomas in the Final Four. He's an NBA Hall of Famer, and I still to this day thought you were you had his number early. He came out, and for some reason we took you out as well. I didn't understand that at the time, but what do you recollect about that one?
Well, I kind of remember that part of it, too. So I thought that was our game plan to try to get in foul trouble.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in foul trouble, so I don't know. Guess he picked me out to give me a rest along with him, but I really didn't want to come out.
So, I know.
And, you know, Isaiah's a great player, but, you know, and I thought I was a pretty decent player, so, you know, I wanted to step up to that challenge.
You were a great player. Don't kid yourself. Best player you ever played with. Take me out of the equation. All right. But the best player you played with at LSU, who was he?
Man, I think he put me on the spot there, Jordy. But
that's all right.
You know, so many great ones. It's kind of hard. The greatest one. I can't really say because all them boys, all them guys was pretty good guy.
But you got to admit now, as goofy as he was, Dwayne Scales could do a little bit of everything, man, right?
Yeah, I was just about to name him, Dwayne, because he came in with us as a freshman with Willie Sims and Rudy Mack. You can't take him out of the equation. Howard Carter. So, you know, there's a bunch of guys that came in and played and played their role. So it's a combination of all these things, man.
What do you remember, Ethan, that the NCAA, that regional final was in the Superdome, and you got to take on Arkansas and then Wichita State to get to the Final Four? I've never seen anything quite like that, that moment, that massive Superdome with LSU basketball fans. That was crazy.
It was crazy, you know, and it's fortunate for us, is not our home, but a home away from home. So, so we wanted to play our best there. You know, cutting the net down in front of your fans and your families and relatives and all that stuff was a great accomplishment, man. That was probably one of the biggest highlights in my life, in my basketball career.
Yeah, no question about that. Fill in to those that that followed you, that admired you, that you made a lot of kids get a basketball and start dribbling it, man. You were something. But what's Ethan Martin doing these days?
Well, right now I'm working for the city as a probation counselor. Counselor and probation officer. Been doing that for the last, 15 years?
See,
you know,
I knew you
down into the working.
I knew with that crazy team that we had that you had to be a counselor one day, man. Because you had them on the sofa talking to them, calming them down.
Yeah.
What do you think of this year's LSU basketball team as they get set to begin their journey?
Well, this year basketball team, I like them a lot. I like them. I really like the young guys. I like the guards. The guard play. They have three guards that I really like. Trayvon, Javante, and Skylar Mays. Yes, sir. Yeah. They all bring a different aspect to the game. You know? So Trayvon is mostly, you know, he can penetrate and get to the hole and dish out and all that, get everybody else involved. And that's what the point guard is supposed to do. Javante, he can do the same. All of them can go offensive-wise, but Javante might be a little better on defense. And then Skylar, he's a combination of both.
I may be biased, but I love Tremont Waters' game, but he ain't had Ethan Martin on him. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you, Johnny. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't know how you did it, man, because you looked like you were half asleep, but, man, nobody got past you, and if they ever put the ball in front of you, it was gone.
Yeah.
It was gone.
Yeah, I kind of was like a days ago out there nonchalant. And I just kind of picked my moments out there. You know, I wouldn't kamikaze all the time. When the time presented itself, I just took advantage of me watching, being patient. That's what you have to do, be patient and pick your time.
Yeah, Ethan Martin, as we wrap things up here, if they ask you for your advice as they get ready for that first game, because it's a nerve-wracking experience, what would you tell this LSU basketball team?
Well, I don't know. Like I said, the SEC tournament game, I think that's a kind of a blessing so they can get hungry again, reassert themselves, you know. You just got to be patient and listen and just basically do what they've been doing and just keep doing it. Keep putting the pedal down. Don't let up, you know, because they're a great team, good team, and you just got to go out there and play.
I appreciate all the passes you threw to me. I hope I knocked down enough of them to pad your assist total. But I love you. I love you to death. You're still my all-time favorite, man. And I wish you nothing but the best to you and your family. And we're going to go hit that golf ball soon, all right?
Yes, that's all I want to do. I play a lot of that now, Jordy. I like to walk, man. I can't run anymore, so I walk it. And I like the white ball.
I'm with you, brother. Ethan.
I appreciate you. Thank you, man.
Thank you, buddy. Love you, man. Take care. Ethan Martin, kind enough to join us. Michael Huguenin next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Well, obviously, the biggest storylines of this week are the NCAA tournament. Yes, he knows football, but, man, he knows some hoops as well. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, how are you, my friend? It's a great week.
Yeah, it is. The next 4 days are the best 4 days on the sports calendar. The first two rounds of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah,
it's hard to beat that.
Let's go. Let's get your thoughts on each bracket, and let's move along. Starting with the East, because LSU is a 3 seed there. Duke is 1. Michigan State is 2. LSU's a 3 seed. Virginia Tech is a 4. When you look at LSU versus Yale, what comes to mind?
Yale's a well-coached team. They shoot the ball relatively well. They play pretty good defense. They don't commit a lot of turnovers. They're the kind of team that doesn't beat itself. LSU is vastly more athletic and I think more physical. I think that LSU can make a lot of hay in the paint. But Yale again. That's going to be to me a single digit game because I think Yale is going to cause some issues with its shooting.
Do you see a possible upset in this bracket where a lower seed beats a higher seed?
Well, I think Yale's got the potential to beat LSU. Okay. It depends on which LSU team shows up. They got to play good for, I would argue, at least 34, 35 minutes. You play bad basketball for 10 minutes against Yale, and you very easily could lose. St. Louis is playing really good basketball. Virginia Tech can struggle to score, but Virginia Tech's got its players, the guards back. And I think Belmont is going to beat Maryland. I think that's going to be an 11-6 upset. I am not a believer in Maryland. Maryland with Bruno Fernando should be able to, frankly, dominate in the low post because Belmont doesn't have anybody who can cover Fernando. But Belmont does play three big guys, so that gives them 15 fouls.
Yes.
And the difference is Belmont's big guys can hit the mid-range shot. They're going to make Fernando move around defensively. He can get winded. He can be foul-prone. But if Belmont's hitting its threes, I have zero doubt that they will beat Maryland.
Do you see LSU playing two games and getting to the Sweet 16, or do you see them falling short?
I think they lose to Belmont in the second round. I really like this Belmont team. They had some uneven moments last night when they beat Temple, but they shoot the ball well. They have some relatively good athletes. The interesting thing about last night, they beat Temple with their best player, Dylan Windler, not doing much at all offensively. Mm-hmm. Now, he rebounded well, played good D, but didn't score a lot. He is a matchup concern for anybody who plays Belmont because he's a big guy who can stroke the three. So he makes the big guys move around. Belmont's got some pretty good guards. The interesting thing is one of Belmont's best guards is a kid who grew up an hour from Gainesville and yet wasn't recruited by any school in Florida, the McLean kid. So Belmont's a good team, and Rick Byrd is a really, really good coach.
He really is. Who do you have playing in the Eastern bracket final?
I think it's Duke, Michigan State. I think this is the one regional that I think is going to be pretty chalk in terms of the top two seeds getting there. Michigan State, mildly surprised they won a number one seed. This is a team that has had some key injuries, and yet it hasn't bothered them. So Cassius Winston's really good, and Izzo is a master in March. But Duke with Zion, I don't see Michigan State beating Duke with Zion Williamson back.
Gotcha. Michael Hugin and the Athletic. Let's head to the West. Gonzaga, the number one seed. Michigan, number two. Let's see. Texas Tech, number three. Florida State, number four. Is this one of the weaker
sides
of the bracket?
I think this is the weakest region.
Yes.
Michigan, Beilein's a great coach, but you watch Michigan play, and, man, they go through some offensive funks that are hard to explain. I mean, they'll go 3 or 4 minutes not only not scoring, not getting a good shot. Now, they play good defense. They don't turn the ball over all that much. I just don't think Michigan is it. Frankly, I cannot see this Michigan team in the Final Four. Gonzaga is athletic. You also wonder, though, the West Coast Conference was not good. Mm-hmm. And Gonzaga zoomed through it, and they messed around and lost to St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference Final. Gonzaga hasn't seen many good teams since January 1st. So I wouldn't be surprised if they lose. I think a second-round matchup with Syracuse would be problematic for Gonzaga. I don't think Syracuse is that good, but I think Syracuse's style of defense and the way they want to play can mess things up for Gonzaga. I'm intrigued to see Ja Morant, the kid at Murray State, the Murray State Marquette game.
That's a good one.
Two great players, Marcus Howard and Ja Morant.
Yes,
that'll be a fun
game
to watch. Florida State's really big, really physical. They'll go through some offensive problems, though. That's another team that not only will it not score for 4 minutes, it will take brutal shots during those 4 minutes. I think Buffalo can make some noise, and Texas Tech, really good defensive team.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be playing better offensively of late. Maybe that means they hit their stride, or maybe that's just flukish. So the whole Western region is, to me, a mishmash. Wouldn't be surprised, frankly. I can see four or five teams winning it. I just don't think it's that good a region. And the team I do think is going to win,
is Texas Tech, even though I don't think they're that good.
Right.
But I think they're the best team of a sort of a motley group.
All right, let's go to the right side of the bracket. Let's go to the south where Virginia is number one. Tennessee from the Southeastern Conference is a two seed. You've got Kansas State as a four, and Purdue is a three. So it's Virginia, Tennessee, Purdue, Kansas State. What do you like?
Maybe
who
this
do you think?
Is Virginia's year to get to the Final Four.
I think so.
Watch them in the ACC tournament, though. Florida State beat up on them, and Virginia did not get many good. That's the thing with Virginia. I mean, Tony Bennett's a great coach, and they play really strong defense. But, man, offensively at times they are painful to watch. I know they only lost three games. But even in games they win, you watch them play, and you're like, oh, my God, that's just awful basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, the top half of the bracket, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, come on. I think Oregon beats Wisconsin. I think Cal Irvine beats Kansas State. So if Virginia is not in the South Regional Final, I will be shocked, even though I'm not a true believer in Virginia. The bottom half's a little bit more interesting. Cincinnati's an interesting team, extremely physical,
right.
Also got some pretty good athletes. Old Dominion plays phenomenal defense, and I would think they're a sentimental favorite because the coach, Jeff Jones, has cancer. And Villanova, two titles in the last 3 years. This is not anything close to being the kind of team that Villanova's had, but Jay Wright's a really good coach. And Tennessee, for a team that's never been to the Final Four, man, everything is there for them. But I don't believe in Tennessee all that much, frankly. So I think Virginia's going to win the South.
All right.
Partly
so
because the region, I think, is going to be a mismatch after them.
So we got two number ones, both from the same conference. You've got a number three in Texas Tech in the Final Four. And now we come down to the final region. That's the Midwest with North Carolina one, Kentucky number two, Houston number three, Kansas number four. This has to be the toughest bracket.
Yeah, North Carolina and Kentucky in the same bracket. You got to love that. I'm not a believer in Kansas. I think they could lose in the first round or second round. The thing is, if they get to the Sweet 16, they'll be playing basically in front of a home crowd in Kansas City. I don't think Kansas is going to get there. I think this is going to be another region that goes one and two. In terms of the seeds, I think North Carolina is going to beat Kentucky, so I think North Carolina is going to the Final Four. And that means three ACC teams, which is a little bit aggravating in that, I don't know, I just don't like to see three ACC teams, or I don't like to see three teams from any conference in a Final Four. But North Carolina, if you took off, you know, I grew up in North Carolina. I'm not a Tar Heels fan. I don't really care if they win or lose, but everything's being set equal. I don't care if they do lose. Thing is, you watch Carolina play, they are fun to watch. They get up and down the court.
They sure are.
Defense, sometimes they play it, sometimes they don't. But they got some interesting players. And I think if it comes down to it, Roy Williams can outcoach John Calipari. I'm extremely intrigued by the first-round game with Wofford and Seton Hall. I hope Wofford I like mid-majors doing stuff. I'm not a believer in Houston. I think Iowa State, if they
like
play
them
like they did in the Big 12 tournament, can get to the Sweet 16, and they
I
have
like
a great
them
home court advantage. They play great offense. And Utah State, I think, could do some damage, except they get North Carolina in the second round. So, because that's going to beat Washington.
In 30 seconds that we have left, are we going to see the first Duke North Carolina NCAA tournament game for the championship?
Man, that would just feed into those people's egos, wouldn't it?
It sure would.
I think it will be Duke, Virginia. I think Virginia has North Carolina's number, so I think it will be an all-ACC final, but I think it will be Duke, Virginia. Now, you know, I picked three number one seeds to get there. In a year like this, that's not going to happen, but I still think Duke, Virginia is a logical title game for sure.
Go enjoy it, my friend, and we'll talk about it next week, buddy. Always grateful. Thank you.
All right, talk to you next week. Thanks, man.
All right, Michael Huguenin from The Athletic. So that's going to wrap things up today. Special thanks to all of our guests, Josh Heff on Yale, John Brady, Howard Carter, Ethan Huck Martin talking about the good old days, and Michael Huguenin. CD, job well done as always. We have only one Wednesday, March 20th. Have a great one. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 o'clock. after the LSU-Yale ball game. We'll wrap it all up. Until then, go Tigers and stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.